ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
Although he has suspended his campaign for president, Senator Bernie Sanders will be remembered as a disruptor in this year's race for the White House. Sanders calls himself a Democratic Socialist, a title that has not escaped President Trump's attention, who describes socialism as a destroyer of societies. Well, the focus on socialism is timely because this summer, when the Democratic National Party holds its convention here in Milwaukee, the eyes of the world will be on a city that once was considered the most socialist city in the United States. In the early 1900s, Milwaukee elected the first socialist to serve in the U.S. Congress. And three of Milwaukee's mayors were socialist, including Daniel Hone, who spent 24 years in City Hall. In fact, the iconic Hone Bridge over Milwaukee's harbor bears his name. In recent years, you don't find many politicians here describing themselves as socialists, but the legacy of that air is still visible throughout the area. On this edition of UWM Today, we take a closer look at socialism in Milwaukee. Our guests are Ames McGinnis, Associate Professor of History at UWM, and Joel Rast, Associate Professor of Political Science and also the Director of Urban Studies and the Center for Economic Development at the university. Welcome to all of you, gentlemen. Great to have you on today's program.
Good to be here.
Ames, let's begin with you. How did socialism get a foothold in America?
It happens pretty early in the 1800s, and I'll focus in particular on Wisconsin. In 1844, there's a utopian socialist experiment that starts in what's now Ripon, Wisconsin, a utopian settlement called Ceresco. So that's in the early 1840s, starts in 1844. Another key moment is the revolutions of 1848 in German-speaking Europe and elsewhere. The repression of those revolutions led to political refugees scattering to different parts of Europe and also the United States, including Wisconsin. So in the early 1850s, you have a number of people who had knew Karl Marx, knew Friedrich Engels, and they settle in Milwaukee and elsewhere in Wisconsin. In the 1850s, 1860s, 1870s, throughout the second half of the 1800s, there are a number of different movements that identify with socialism and play important roles in events such as the Great Strike of 1886 and the massacre that took place in Milwaukee's neighborhood of Bayview in May of 1886. I think the key, though, to the history of socialist mayors that you're talking about has to do with Victor Berger, who is an immigrant who speaks German. He was born in Austria-Hungary. He comes to Milwaukee, and then in the late 1800s, early 20th century, he and other socialists create a really powerful organizing strategy, an alliance between a socialist party that explicitly claims to represent the interests of the working class, and then organized labor or unions. And that combination of unions and a political party that is explicitly devoted to the interests of the working class, that turns out to be an extremely successful strategy for mobilizing people to vote and to vote for socialists.
And Joel, from your standpoint, you've covered a lot of the local politics that were imbued with the socialist movement. It was a powerful, powerful change from the way Milwaukee had previously been operating, right?
Yeah, well, the socialist presence in Milwaukee, I think, is maybe not all that surprising, given what Ames said about people coming over from Germany, in particular, Milwaukee is a city with a large, especially back around the turn of the 20th century, a large German immigrant population. And these were people who were acquainted with socialist ideas, coming from a place where these ideas were sort of part of the mainstream. So as those ideas became imported through these German immigrants, they caught on here in Milwaukee in a way that they might not have caught on so well in other places.
Were there other political parties that were opposed to the socialists?
Certainly. The socialists had to contend both with Republicans and Democrats. They also had other rivals on the left who didn't agree with their version of socialism, including at different points anarchists, and also the Communist Party. The Communist Party and the Socialist Party were very much opposed to one another and very different. Sometimes people in the present don't understand that, but certainly in Milwaukee, there was a great rivalry and intense opposition between communists and socialists. It's also important to remember that, socialists were never a majority in the city. Whenever a socialist won an elected office in Milwaukee, it was because they got votes from people who weren't socialists. And so socialists were very skilled at finding issues that could speak across party divisions. One of their big issues was fighting corruption. And they were extremely successful at fighting corruption. And that visible success got them the votes of people who didn't necessarily identify as socialists.
So were they Republicans, Democrats, who were a part of the mix at the time, Joe?
I was just going to add to what Ames was pointing out there in terms of the socialist effort to sort of clean up government. City governments at that time, the early 20th century, were oftentimes run by political machines. There was a lot of corruption in city government. And socialists were not that different in many ways from the old sort of municipal reform movements that were also sort of progressive era reform that was also kind of sweeping many cities at that time. And that was something that was appealing to a lot of people because they were sick of all the corruption, and it was something that, a lot of people wanted to see eliminated. So the fact that the socialists identified themselves with clean government was certainly something that helped them win a lot of votes.
Hey, Ames, I have to ask, was Milwaukee an anomaly here? Did socialists get a foothold in any other cities to the degree that they did here in Wisconsin?
There were some smaller cities where socialists had pretty good runs, places such as Reading, Pennsylvania, and Bridgeport, Connecticut. But nowhere, I think, in the United States did socialists have such longevity or as much influence as they did in Milwaukee. They weren't just a flash in the pan. They actually had an organizing strategy, had organizing strategies that enabled them to win office repeatedly. And again, a key to their strategy is their ability to find issues that could speak to people who weren't socialists and get their votes. Clean government, clean water, parks, excellent public services, libraries, et cetera, public services that people could value regardless of whether they were socialists or not.
So the other thing I would add to that is that socialists in the way it was practiced in Milwaukee were in many ways not that different from sort of New Deal Democrats. They weren't particularly radical. They weren't Marxists. They weren't trying to sort of take over the means of production. What they wanted to do was to step in areas where they saw clear market failures. So places where the private sector was not stepping in to address some public need. This was where they saw a role for government. And in that sense, they're not very different from the kinds of ideas that Bernie Sanders was talking about while he was running for president. The notion of, you know, Medicare for all and free college tuition. These are things where the marketplace is many people would argue is not functioning particularly efficiently. So why not have government step in and provide some of these things? This was the old socialist philosophy, and it's also very much what Bernie Sanders was about, I think.
Yeah, I was going to ask, do you think Bernie would have been a hit with these folks back in the early 1900s?
I think that for most socialists, I think would yes have been excited about Bernie. I think that they would have. I think Bernie's even though Bernie obviously ran to be in the Democratic primary, he is an independent and hasn't joined the party. The Democratic Party, and I think that would have resonated with socialists as well. For instance, Frank Zeidler, even though his positions were very similar to those of liberal Republicans and liberal Democrats, he was always very adamant about maintaining his independence from the Democratic Party and going it alone in the Socialist Party.
It sounds like Mayor Zeidler and Bernie could have been running mates, right?
That's an interesting question. In other ways, though, they had very different political styles. Bernie often seems kind of angry when he speaks, and he gets very excited. You know, Frank Zeidler was a very eloquent speaker. But the way that he presented himself as a political leader was, I think, more buttoned down. He spent a lot of time focusing on the importance of planning and meetings and doing things. Bernie was a bigger fan of the New Deal than Frank Zeidler as well. I think as Joel said, there was a lot of overlap between what socialists wanted in the 1930s and what FDR wanted and tried to achieve during the New Deal. But socialists felt ambivalent about the New Deal. Many of them felt that the New Deal was stealing their ideas. I think Frank Zeidler and other socialists, people who remained with the party, really saw the New Deal as a devastating blow to the Socialist Party. They saw the New Deal Democrats as taking their ideas, but not taking them far enough, simply reforming capitalism. Whereas socialists really still sought an alternative to capitalism, a system that they thought could be more just, and they would say more democratic than capitalism.
Yeah, I would just to build on that. I mean, I think that there's always going to be a political contest over where you draw the line between state and market in this society. There's always been that contest, and there always will be. So New Deal liberalism was, one way of drawing that line, which involved a more of a role for government than there had been previously. Yeah, now we have what many people call neoliberalism, which is an approach, an attitude that government should be shrunk as much as possible, and the private sector should do as much as possible. So we're still sort of contesting where that line should be drawn. Whether you call it socialism or liberalism, I'm not sure the name is so important. Always, I think it's more sort of reflecting an ongoing conflict about what the proper role is for government and what's the proper role for the marketplace.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. Good to have you with us this week. If you're just joining us, our topic today is socialism in Milwaukee. At one point, Milwaukee was viewed as perhaps the most socialist city in the entire country. Our guests on today's program are Ames McGinnis, Associate Professor of History, and Joel Rast, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Milwaukee. Joel and Ames, how did Milwaukee change because of the socialists? What can we look at today in our community that perhaps might not have been here if the socialists had not been in power for as long as they were? Joe?
Well, I mean, I'll start and Ames can sort of pick up where I leave off. I would say that one of the most visible things that, you know, we see every day is our lakefront, our park system. Those are legacies of socialist Milwaukee. The socialists made a priority of making green space available to the city's working class residents through the extensive park system that we have and by making the lakefront accessible.
Well, let's talk about the lakefront, because the lakefront didn't look anything like it does today before the socialists got involved, right?
That's true. Under Mayor Daniel Hone in the 1920s, a lot of landfill was added to Milwaukee's coastline to create what's now the area around Lincoln Memorial Drive. And that project had a number of goals. One was to create access to the lakefront and the lakeshore for working class people, areas that so that there could be part of a lakeshore that wasn't either occupied by factories or by rich people's mansions. But it had other goals as well. To people involved in building the park had jobs. So it increased employment. And by reducing unemployment, by creating those public jobs, it had the larger effect of raising wages for working class more generally and strengthening the hand of organized labor. So the lakefront was not just about creating a beautiful space, although it was about that. It also fit into with other socialist goals.
What about the rest of the park system? Was it directly the result of socialists getting involved in preserving that space as parkland?
Well, yes. I mean, already starting in the 1890s, especially before the socialists first came to power in 1910, there were important improvements that were made in the city's park system. But a really key figure in expanding the parks and changing the vision of the parks was Charles Whitnell, who was an extremely smart socialist, very savvy when it comes to money and finances. He was actually a banker as well. And his master plan created in 1923 really creates a comprehensive and really brilliant vision for parks in the city and the county. And among his goals are to create more recreational opportunities for poor people and working class people. Beautiful parks shouldn't just be the preserve of the rich.
Joel, I want to talk a little bit about Mayor Hohn. You mentioned earlier there were three socialist mayors, some serving much, much shorter periods of time than Hohn. Hohn was mayor for, 24 years?
I believe that's right. Is that right, Ames?
From 1916 to 1940.
So long, long time, leading right up to the beginning of World War II. What was it about Hohn that made him so appealing to people throughout the city? Even though you noticed there are more Republicans and Democrats than socialists, but here you had a socialist who was elected over and over and over again.
Well, I'm going to actually let Ames speak to that question because knowledge of Milwaukee socialism is more of what Frank Zeidler, the Frank Zeidler period, than the Daniel Hohn period.
Well, we'll let Ames pick up on Mayor Hohn, and then we'll talk to you about Zeidler.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mayor Hohn, I think he's just a remarkably successful mayor, and he's widely regarded. At the time, and still today, widely regarded as one of the most successful and effective mayors in U.S. history. Some of his achievements include not just the lakefront that we mentioned and supporting the park system, but also improving water quality in Milwaukee. There's a cutting edge sewage treatment plant that is created during his administration. Many of us in Milwaukee and elsewhere are familiar with Milorganite, which is a fabulously innovative idea for transforming sewage waste through a process into fertilizer that actually earns money for the city. He supports schools, introducing things such as free textbooks, lunches, dental and medical programs. Public health is a big issue for Daniel Hohn. Also, believe it or not, the socialists are extremely effective at keeping taxes low. Property taxes low, and that's related to another one of their great successes, which is to minimize public debt. So Milwaukee remains solvent, doesn't go bankrupt during the Great Depression, in contrast to many other cities and towns in the United States. And this is because the Milwaukee socialists and Dan Hohn in particular are extremely thrifty and extremely wary, opposed to plunging the city into debt. Sometimes people mistakenly describe this as fiscal conservatism. Socialists would have said that this was fiscal socialism. Their efforts to reduce debt were part of their agenda to minimize the influence of banks and private lenders on public policy. So by instituting pay-as-you-go government, you know, you only spend as much as you receive in tax revenue, you avoid having to take out loans from private banks or private lenders. And so Hohn is widely admired. I think that's the biggest reason.
Yeah, so well, we sure gave him his due there. But Joel, I want you to have a little bit of time to talk about the other great socialist mayor, Frank Zeidler.
Yeah, Frank Zeidler, he became mayor during a time when, right after World War II, during a time when a lot of cities were undertaking major rebuilding programs. So this was the period of urban renewal and the clearing of slums and rebuilding of downtowns. And this was going on all over the country and cities all over the country. But it required, for that to happen, it required a close alliance between the downtown business community and city government. And as you can probably guess, that did not happen in Milwaukee. Frank Zeidler had his ideas about what urban renewal should look like and what the post-war rebuilding program should look like. The business community had its ideas, and a partnership really never developed in Milwaukee. So that limited some of the things that Frank Zeidler was able to do, not, you know, having this close working relationship with business. But he did manage to do some things. He pursued this major annexation program, and he was able to do that without any real sort of business support, and doubled the size of the city, essentially. So at a time when a lot of cities were losing their population to the suburbs, Zeidler just went out and annexed those areas where people were moving so that they were now part of the city again. So he was able to maintain that tax base. He had some success building public housing, not as much as he would have liked, but there was some public housing built. He would have liked it to have been for working class people, not just poor people. There was a major housing shortage at the time. And his idea of public housing with this was that this would be something for working people, not just poor people. But again, federal restrictions on what could be built limited his ability to pursue that agenda.
Fascinating. Just a minute or two left here. I have to ask both of you briefly, do you think there'll ever be another socialist mayor in Milwaukee?
I think it's possible. I think if there is another socialist mayor, it's likely that mayor will have to learn from socialists in the past about how they won public office. And I think that the key was finding issues such as fighting corruption, supporting public health, other kinds of issues that speak to socialists, but to speak to people, to other people as well, as a way to bring folks together.
And how about you, Joel?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say that that question probably depends in part on what happens to the socialist movement in the United States. Did Bernie Sanders manage to convince enough people that socialism is not a dirty word, that it's not Marxism, it's not communism? And so if it becomes more sort of a mainstream idea, then that certainly would raise the possibilities, you would think, for somebody who identifies as socialist to be elected the mayor of a city like Milwaukee.
Gentlemen, this has been a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for taking some time today to talk about Milwaukee and its socialist roots.
Thank you.
Ames McGinnis. And Joel Rast, both associate professors at UWM, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. That's all for this week's program, everybody. You all take care, be healthy. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.